everyone. Welcome to episode 117. I'm trying to read this without my readers. Good luck. I think that's the right number. I feel like I'm part of a an eye exam. Where? What do the letters say? And I'm like, is that an F or a P? 117 of Jen and Millie, where a Gen Xer and a millennial share the strength-based perspective through which they view the world. We are your hosts, Allison and Tess.
I feel like you shouldn't even need to read it. I could just tell you the number at this point. I mean,
except for whatever reason, I get really tripped up when I don't have the script.
I know, which is crazy. I mean, I know. You've done so much acting that I feel like you should know your lines at this point. Just saying.
You know, what's funny though is it's when I'm not acting that I need the prompts. It's kind of like the slides when I'm facilitating. I don't really need them. I could do this in my sleep.
It just like...
However...
It's like, at this point, I know to share this story. And I'll share the story the exact same way every single time I share it. But I need the slide that has the Don Clifton quote on it to trigger that exact
yes,
story.
Yes, it has a visual effect of comfort to me. So I can hardly read that because I don't have my readers on. Spoiler alert, Tess, I had to get bifocals.
Okay. So we transitioned from readers to bifocals.
Well, readers are essentially
just cheap,
cheap bifocals. So I got the real deal. Like, they're on their way. They're coming.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have, it's like more of a try, actually. So I'll be able to see out, see here, and see here.
Okay.
And the whole process of it, like, I've known I've needed these. And do I actually, could I get by with my readers forever? Yeah. But I have to take them on and off, and when I'm in front of the screen, it's really super annoying. So yeah. I broke down and did it. I have come to a place of acceptance. There's a whole lot going on.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot going on here, actually, with acceptance and some things that I'm just going to stay in denial about. But about aging, that it's interesting how I fight what would make my life easier.
Because it denotes, like, acknowledging that you're growing older.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, of course. There's something so richly psychological about that. Yes.
So, 100%. So much so. So on that note, the not being able to see this and admitting that I can't see this, and I don't know, the readers are right here, but to take them on and off my head is just such a frustration. And so I have been around all this past week someone who has prescription sunglasses.
Yeah.
Which I find nerdy. I do. I find this very nerdy. Like, just wear your contacts and put your sunglasses on, right?
But would it be better to do clip-ons over your...
Well, I mean, but I'm like, wow, these Maui gyms are prescription? And then I'm like, look at you, Judge Judy, who, you know, is coming in. You just ordered your bifocals. You should probably shut your mouth.
Prescription sunglasses. Do your bifocals have the very visual little square in them?
No, I paid extra to not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I paid extra to look normal.
Okay. I paid extra to look normal. Well, I look forward to seeing them.
And they're very on-brand Allison sort of glasses, but they're fun.
Of course.
And I learned a bit about myself in that process.
I'm so proud of you.
But, like, making an eye appointment... Like, just the process of things is really, I've been so insanely travel heavy, and as I mentioned in the last episode, things have just taken off in a way that I couldn't anticipate. Mm-hmm. So I am getting better day by day of naming. I actually have these needs that should I go about... taking care of it, I might feel a little bit better about myself.
Yeah, that's good.
So I've got a great quote to start us off today, which may require me to put my readers on to read. But I've been reading Brianna West.
Okay.
No, she wrote The Pivot Year. She wrote The Mountain Is You. West Weist, okay. W-I-E-S-T.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm not always, I mean, sorry, Brie, if you're listening, I'm not always a fan of her work, but Pivot Year is daily reading for me that I really like. And this one made me think of the readers and the aging and all of the things. But okay. This is day 93 in my journey of reading this book. Okay. Your experience of today is constructed from the minor choices of yesterday. Where you left your shoes, the email you didn't answer, the appointment you forgot you made. The lingering emotions wandering through your insides, undigested, unplaced. Mm. The more you get better at anticipating your future needs, the easier it becomes to be present within your life. The more you learn to live in this equilibrium, you find it easier and easier to sip the tea and not worry about so many other things because they're settled. Even if they're not, you trust yourself to handle them. You do not need to reactivate your nervous system and pump yourself full of adrenaline-fueled focus to remember to take care of what your needs. Let me say that again. You do not need to reactivate your nervous system, pump yourself full of adrenaline-fueled focus to remember to take care of what needs caring for. Your choices must begin to reflect not just the person you are, but also the one you're becoming.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I think a lot about future self because I'd like her to be proud of me. And one of the things that has happened this week is future me did not do the best job taking care of the needs of Allison. And I had one of the worst days ever at work. And I mean ever. And learning about like just a little bit of prep or a little bit of planning and all the prep and the planning in the world cannot prepare you for.
Yeah.
Was a great reminder to me that there are going to be bad days at work.
Yeah.
Even in work that I love, even in work that has brought me tremendous joy, even in work that has taken off, even if me being so aligned in my purpose, I am still going to have difficult days.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think I become a better facilitator, a better teacher, a better coach, a better consultant, because it's through those scenarios that I grow exponentially.
Yeah.
Would love it if that was not the case. I would love it if I could just show up in tomorrow and things just go really, really well. And I don't have to learn all these lessons of today. That would be super helpful, universe, if you can hand that to me. But I spent the last week in California. The majority of that week, I was with a team in LA, and an amazing team, but a team that is all remote. So they exist in virtual space. And one of the things I had not, future me had not thought about regarding this team was just how uncomfortable this team would be with what I would call real life water cooler commute, going to the things.
Yeah.
That really revved up their nervous systems and irritated them. And as a result, we had some trickiness.
Yeah.
They also are a team that leads with self-assurance and competition.
Cool.
So they basically said, nope. Actually not going to do that. We're going to do this. And I got to a point in the day three of teaching where I just turned my hands up and said, what do y'all want to do here?
Yeah.
What would look like success to you today? Because we are clearly going off the rails. And I'm going to reveal to you vulnerably as a facilitator, I don't really know what the hell to do with you right now.
Yeah.
And their capacity to first and foremost empathize and respect and honor me was amazing. But they had such a desire to get to what I would call a month's worth of learning in 2 days that they just couldn't turn that need off.
Yep.
So we spent hours in a boardroom talking it out. They needed to be heard. They needed to create a why statement. They needed to create their team's why statement. They needed to craft what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had lots of activities and lots of fun learning for them that we didn't yet get to.
Yeah.
but I had to let go and say, okay, I felt like I was failing the entire time. Felt like, wow, there's going to be no cohesion here. This is going to be a complete loss. And instead, when I kind of turned it over to them to lead themselves, granted, this is day three of learning, they stepped up and in to leadership roles. And they were willing and able to get things done when I got out of the way. Now, as a facilitator, sometimes you think you got to be in control the whole time. Like, you let them explore and you guide them and you, you know, bring them to that place of, you know, first they got to get to know each other. They'd never been together. Then you need to create this space where they can craft, you know, a vision of culture, that kind of thing. But they wanted to skip some of these parts to get here. But what actually happened is the learning that happened in day one and two ended up serving them in day three when I got out of the way. Yeah. Hmm. Releasing that, like, I literally was in the hallway in tears.
Yeah.
Thinking, this is on me to corral. And there's no corralling. And so once again, thank you for all the learning. Once I let go, things really were in flow and in tandem, and they felt like they could move on. But one of the hardest days that I've had in a long, long time. Yeah. Most of the time, groups are very like, yep, she gave us the rules. We're going to honor them.
Yeah.
She gave us the agreements. We're going to honor those. She gave us the instructions. She's guiding our day.
Yeah.
That's what I'm used to.
Yeah.
This team said, no, thanks. We're going to do it this way.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have handled that with as much grace and ingenuity as you did. Like, which you did never, acknowledge that. Like,
I have never been called sophisticated in my life. as you probably know, I have never been called sophisticated. No one has ever referred to me as sophisticated. And that was the feedback I received.
Like, overall? Or specifically on that day?
On that day, and kind of in general overall, like, I bring a sense of sophistication and grace and knowledge. I present
myself. That
makes
a little more sense. Like, the grace,
in a very sophisticated,
I don't know, sophisticated.
All I can think of, when someone calls me sophisticated, I think about the fact that I fell down somebody's stairs just 2 weeks ago. Yeah. On a Sunday, because I was speeding down the steps. Mm-hmm. Sophisticated is not something that I would refer to myself. So I think with aging, I am learning, like, these bad days or these rough days or when things go off the rails or where I think, oh, well, wow, that wasn't in the plan. There are better things that actually come of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, right? Like, there is potential in the pivot, right? And so to see what...
Says someone with high adaptability.
Yes, yes. I will say, yes, all of that is spoken from someone who sees a lot of potential in the opportunity there. But I also think about not just from an adaptability sense, right? About how what you did is Search Institute's developmental asset of developmental relationship thing of sharing power, right?
Yeah.
Like, in most facilitation contexts, right, you come from a place of you are the one in power. You are the facilitator. You're guiding their learning. You are guiding their growth, right? But you are the one dictating what is happening, at what pace, in what mode, right? And here you had people that a little bit forcibly led you to sharing power, right?
Yes.
But also the growth that happened there when you released it and said, where do we need to go from here?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm establishing trust with the team every step of the way.
Yeah.
So pre-calls, I was establishing trust with the individuals, bring them together. I should have known when we were doing agreements, and usually I set out the agreements and say, you know, here's what we think. And I'll say, does anybody else have any other ideas? And they're like, oh, looks pretty good. It was an hour-long conversation.
Yeah, It's like this tea of
about yeah. additional agreements. And I thought to myself, oh.
That's so fascinating. I have so many questions about this team, right? Like, what kind of industry,
I love them.
What kind of, like, love them. Positions love them. Are they and all that kind of stuff that I'm like, I just want to psychoanalyze them so much. And based
that
on
is
their
a,
strengths, like...
Yes, that is an offline conversation,
yes,
but
for
yes,
sure, for sure.
They are amazing. Sure. And I fell deeply in love with this team. And I think there was a lot of reciprocity in that, and I have continued work now going on with this team. You know, LA is not my typical teaching ground either.
Yeah.
So very different mm-hmm. For me, different vibe. Navigate. I swore I will never, ever, ever complain about Denver traffic ever again, rest of my life. So I was West Hollywood, like Sunset Boulevard.
I do not know LA geography at all.
It's stunningly beautiful, but just high levels of traffic and congested to go, you know, a few steps. But, you know, those kinds of things that slowed them down were so clear. And it's remarkable to me in this work how humans, I'm just fascinated with how humans show up.
Oh, yeah.
And, okay, same sort of vein. My nervous system was just wrecked this week. Yeah. So wrapped up with the team, and then I had personal travel, and I was sharing with you in the green room. The person I was traveling with, he does not believe in early arrivals. So we showed up 30 minutes ahead of our flight, and
which
I thought multiple times
to hear about.
Well, so prior to that, which I hadn't mentioned yet, but prior to that, I had set up this, surprise, sunset, it was a horseback ride in kind of the hillside of Malibu overlooking the ocean.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And it, yes, but we had weather come in. So this wonderful guide, it was just her and her significant other and us. So it was a private ride, just us four. She reached out to me and said, "Hey, we've got weather coming in. Could you guys be here at 2 instead of 5:30?
Okay.
And I was like, sure, we can figure that out. We're in Hermosa Beach. We need to get to Malibu. That's about a 2-hour plan. So, not really that long, but in my mind, you know, adding a little time. So we get in the car to go, and I'm trying to keep this whole gig a surprise.
Yeah.
And navigation, traffic, there was a mudslide. There's all of these things to figure out. And I'm realizing that if we're not there at 2, we could potentially not get the ride at all, because if the weather comes in too soon, like, too bad we're not taking the horses out to have them slide.
Yeah.
So I am, I mean, gripping.
Yeah.
I am very, very anxious and very nervous, and that does not look good on me. And especially around somebody who's really aloof and like, yeah, we'll get there when we get there. Dinner reservations are at 6:30. Let's leave at 6:29. So that had happened in the previous day, and I got super emotional and just named, look, I'm on the brink of crying. Yeah. So if I do, it's not about you. It's about me and my anxiety of this all going perfectly.
Yeah. Okay.
Fast forward to the end of the trip. We're flying back here to Denver, and I'm like, is your watch working? Do you know what time it is? Because we should go. And we got there 30 minutes ahead of time. And as I mentioned to you in the green room, the problem here is the evidence and the data continue to support his philosophy in last minute success.
Yeah.
We walked, I have never seen the, I had to check a bag. I have never seen zero line. Zero line.
Never would that happen.
And I would, when I walked up, I was like, can I actually use this cask? Is this cask like working? And he's like, yeah. And then she's like, don't worry about it. Just here, bring it. Bring it to me. Didn't even have to do my own self tag. Then we stroll right on through security.
Uh-huh. Of course.
No wait, no issues. And then our gate is literally like two steps away.
Of course. It's not a walk across the airport as it should be.
At LAX.
At LAX.
So we walk up. We have like 10 minutes yet.
Oh my God. So you get to the airport 30 minutes before your flight leaves, right? Not even, and you have to check a bag. And so in any normal chain of events, this would mean that you miss your flight. But because
it would mean disaster.
Total disaster. For Allison. Total disaster. But somehow, in some way, everything continues to line up so that his timing.
So I ask you this, and I want you to think about this.
No.
Energy contagion is a real thing. On our flight home, there were very anxious flight attendants. I don't know if it was their first time flying into Denver, but they were all, everybody was all rattled about turbulence. That is a normal part of flying into Denver.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's usually worse coming one way or the other, but doesn't really matter. You're going to have turbulence. I have never heard a flight crew speak to it so much. Over and over, at the beginning of the flight, in the middle of the flight, at the end of the flight, we have 2 minutes to turbulence, so we need to take our seats. Hey, all, we have 1 minute. The pilot is telling us we have 1 minute until things are going to get real bumpy around here. Like four times they said, tighten up your seatbelts. I'm like, we're going on a ride. Like, I was excited about it. I'm thinking, I've never experienced this kind of turbulence. It was nothing. But they had that whole group of humans so ramped up and anxious. Yeah. There was a medical emergency on the plane.
Oh, my God.
There was... Jeez. So I kept thinking to myself, and, you know, here next to me, he's just like...
Cool as a cucumber. Yeah.
Sleeping.
Oh, like, my God. No.
So I'm thinking to myself, is energy contagion... Actually, I'm not asking myself, is it true? It is...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's real.
Yep.
And my jitter crazy sort of, oh, we need to be there 3 hours in advance, doesn't help me. It often leads to me being more forgetful and more likely to be late because I'm in such freneticism. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way I'll ever be able to, like, buy his personality and put it in a vial and, you know, injected into my system and all of a sudden I become cool as a cucumber. That is not going to happen to me.
What a
vivid
scenario, shouldn't it?
But I would love to learn from it.
Yeah.
And I am trying really hard to learn from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that energy would have helped me in my worst day at work.
Yeah. That's good. Wow. So much there. So much to learn.
Lots.
So much to talk through. I think I'm really glad that you shared this worst day at work, right? Because I think in this space, this container, the two of us being who we are, willing to make these seismic life changes to follow passion and purpose, like, I think it could be really easy to listen. I hope nobody, like, believes this, right? But, like, I feel like we debrief well, we're intentional about our conversations, that I think it could be really easy to be like, they know what's up, they've got this figured out, right? Mm-hmm. We're learning. We very much admit that all the time, right? But, like, I could see how from, like, an outside perspective, it would be easy to think that...
We're sophisticated.
We are. Yeah. Once again, I don't know that I've ever gotten that either. But I think more like work is easy for them, right? Or work is, or even life is, you know, because they take this posture of learning, right? Like, which, like, I get that. And a lot of life is really great. Not easy, but really great. Because I feel like even in the worst day at work, there's opportunity to learn. And you've already noted the learning opportunities that have come from your worst day at work, right? But I feel like it's also important to note that, like, sometimes we just have shitty days at work and we can, like, leave it at that. Like, that can be the period, right? I think there's always opportunity to learn and grow and reflect from really hard days. And I think that that's a really good and important step. But also, sometimes hard days are just hard days, right? And sometimes we need to leave it at that for our own health and move on rather than dissect what the worst days have taught us, right? Like, that kind of emotional labor then keeps you hyper fixated on your worst day.
Do you think that you and I do this? This is just an epiphany because I I'm part of a team that's high individualization.
Yeah.
And I've been noticing lately that it's actually a watch out for us, that we're all so high individualization that we constantly customize. But I was curious, just now as you're saying that, we have a bend towards high learner. Yours is much higher than mine, but mine is high.
Is that... Certainly, right? Like, we're always... people with high learner, right, and people with high developer, right, with which both of us, you have in your top 10, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't looked at your full 34 in a bit. It's fairly high for me, too. Like, I feel like that combination is predisposed to see opportunities to learn and grow from experiences, right? But also, too, tied with, but above and beyond our strengths, are our personal values, which is a commitment to self-growth, right? Commitment to being present to our own lives, right? And living life intentionally, living life where we become better versions of ourselves with each passing day. And so it's a both and, right? You don't need to have those kinds of strengths to constantly be doing this, right? But I think absolutely, right? Like, there's people who are predisposed to kind of constantly doing this digging and tilling, right, of our own lived experiences to see what kind of lessons we can glean from them.
And it just, you know, every once in a while when we chat, it occurs to me that it reminds me of when you first looked at your strengths and you said, you mean not everybody does this?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I'm in awe when I think, oh, not everybody wants personal growth.
Yeah.
Not right? Everybody has that as a value.
That we have, the fact that we have to name that as one of our values is a reminder that not everybody has that. Yeah, some people are very content with their lives the way they are, with not digging up things that they just want to kind of leave buried and not deal with. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's a reminder to me all the time, and that 1 in 33 million unique, the stats around values would probably be even more unique.
Very much
because
so,
it's lived experiences. It's also season and stage of life. I mean, I feel like my values have evolved. They've probably been pretty fundamental, but they've evolved and become much more finite.
Yeah.
And in some ways have probably shifted.
Yeah, certainly.
As being part of a marriage, as being part of a team, to more of this independent solo artistry life that I'm living. There's some really different pinpoints of my values now that look very different.
Absolutely.
So the learning, I mean, even in it, when I was experiencing that, like, oh, this is going off the rails, I'm failing, this is not working, my body was like physically trying to grip.
Yep.
And that was a reminder to me that I needed to let go.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. Which didn't used to be. Actually, it used to be when I would start to feel grip, I would grip even tighter.
100%, yeah.
And now I've got more of this like, oh, I guess I should let loose. Well, I'm standing there thinking, we've got to make this fly. And what's going to happen if we don't? I very calmly turned and said, have you ever missed a flight before?
And what did he say? Has he ever missed a flight?
Once. I said, oh. And he said, have you? And I said, never. No.
This might be my first. Sorry, I would have responded to that.
My body was like, what's the actual worst case scenario?
Yep.
And then I spoke that out loud. And I said, so the worst scenario here is you don't have to check a bag. You just go. And bye, like, I'll stay here another day in sunny California. See ya. You know, like, I was like, that's okay. And he was like, leave you here by yourself? He's like, I'm not going to leave you here.
Yeah.
And that was also a little bit of recognition that when I get stressed, I will absolutely shut down and boundary up.
Yeah,
put the shield, put the force field around me. Mm-hmm. Like, I great recognition in that regard.
Yeah.
So I had a week full of learning about what constitutes the what's a bad day or what's a not so great experience. How do I really measure that? Because now I think, granted, I'm Tuesday. Monday I was still messy. Great learning there too. Like, I need to give myself the day of return to literally not be around people. I was so short and shitty and not effective in the meetings that I had on Monday. My communication was off. I was resting B face. I was just not in a good place. Today, 100% better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so many of your lessons here point to the fact that you can glean so much from rough times, rough experiences, bad days, right? But I think I want to reiterate that you said that so much of your learning from this last week, which included some really hard moments, and that learning, I think, comes from multiple places, right? Like, it comes from your strengths and your disposition, your bent towards that. It comes from your commitment and values. I think also you noted it, but I want to name it out. Like, it comes from, like, as we live more life, we gain more experiences, but that experiences provide us with data with how to respond, right? They provide us with information based on, right, naturally, how have we responded in the past, right? How are we being bent towards responding now? And the choice as to whether or not we want to respond the way we have in similar situations or choose something different. And you made that choice, right? Like, I'm thinking also, like, psychosomatically, right, when you started to, like, tense up, right? And you, in your own intersection of all of those things, right, personal growth, your values, your knowledge of self-awareness and your own strengths, right, and the lived experience you have, decided that you didn't want to respond the way you always have, and you chose to respond differently. And, like, in, like, the anatomy of a self-growth moment, right, all of those things come together to make a different choice, right? That it's not this, like, when we talk self-growth at this high level, right, when we talk strengths, like, all of these tools that we talk about in this space are all things that go into our toolkit that, in reality, where and when and how self-growth happens is in these types of moments, right? Is in these moments where you choose a different response, a different reaction. You choose to go a different pathway than you normally would have, right? And what data does that give you, right, about how you're responding and who you are by making that choice instead of one that you might have taken before you went on this path, right? It doesn't happen. Reflection, conversations, journaling, all of these things are fabulous tools. Your top five report, all of these are great, right? But the actual self-growth happens when you make the different choice, right? When you choose to respond differently in a more healthy way and something that's more aligned with your strengths, right? Like, and I think that's such a beautiful testament to, like, this is what it actually means when we say all of that stuff is important. All of that is doing the work, right? But all of that leads up to you being able to, in a moment of high stress, right, of frustration, of nearing breakdown, to choose a different way, right? Mm-hmm. And now seeing how that then shifted the outcomes versus if you would have continued to tense up and tighten up, like, what would that scenario have looked like had you said, actually, this is what we're doing, right? Like, you probably would not have had the kind of growth. You probably would not have been called sophisticated, right? If you had been militant in sticking to your approach and tightening up, like, how you would have responded, you know, before.
I wouldn't have them asking me to do another one of these in 3 months.
There you go. Yeah.
Can you think of a moment recently where you had to pull from the tools?
Oh my gosh, all the time. I had to pull from the tools. Every damn day, I feel like. I just got off taking my comprehensive exams. And let me tell you, I had to pull every tool in the toolkit and dust out the bottom of the bin to try and see if there were more tools that I hadn't found yet. It's like all the stress, if you can put yourself back to finals week. And you have all these papers, right? And like think about it, like, and grad school is that much, like, tougher, like, with more papers, PhD programs are that much tougher, right? It's like finals week, but probably multiplied by 10, right? Like, this is like this exam
more period, than 10.
Probably more than 10. This exam period, 4.5-ish days, right? Like where I have to put on paper, like I have to respond to questions that prove that I can claim that I'm an expert in what I'm getting my terminal degree in, right? And so there's a lot, like I've spent over a year preparing for this exam. Like I knew I would be taking it at this point. So last year at this time, I was developing what I was going to claim expertise in, like what my concentrations are, developing a reading list, selecting committee members that could write questions that would, you know, prompt me to prove that I can say I'm an expert, all of these sorts of things, right? And then I did an independent study in the fall to work through a bunch of material that I needed to be able to sit for these exams. And I'm also like an on time prepared kind of person, right? And I absolutely love my mentoring advisor, but she works at a very different time and level of preparedness than I do. And so Thursday morning, 9 a.m. our exam is supposed to begin. And I get a text from her at like 8:30, and she's like, and this isn't her, this is actually another one of my committee members, and I know whom, but we didn't have to name who it was when she and I were talking. She's like, this committee member hasn't sent me questions for you yet, and so I'm going to wait till 10, and if they still haven't sent questions, I'll send you what I have, and then I'll follow up. So 10:20 rolls around, and I finally get my first round of questions, right? And this is an hour and 20 minutes into the exam, and I've, like, done all this prep. I've, like, tried to, like, psych myself up. I have like, and I could show you the picture, all the books that are on my reading list, right? Like pulled off of my bookshelves, stacked up in order so I can reference them when I need to cite them, right? Like I have all my written notes listed out. Your input brain is probably going crazy right now. But like, so I had like done everything, right? 9 a.m. rolls around and I don't have my exam, right? So I don't know what else to do except I pace around my apartment. I live in 400 square feet, right? And so it takes me 10 seconds, not even. It takes me 5 seconds to pace, right? And so here's my...
Oh, that has to be at the front of our Insta post here.
But yeah, it's... So I get the first questions, and then she's like, I'm going to reach out to the committee member again. And I said, like, can I reach out to them? Like, would that be helpful? And she's like, nah, I've texted, I've called, I've emailed, nothing. And granted, this person knows they're on my committee. This person has received communication. They edited the list. They're who I took the independent study with in the fall to work through material for this exam. Like, well aware of when I'm taking this and what my exam is on. And so... it's like noon and my chair is like, I still haven't received. So here's an additional question. Cause basically I was supposed to get 8 to 9 questions to choose 4 to respond to. And so I originally received 6 and she's like, I'm just going to write more questions for you because I haven't received questions from this other member. And yeah, so she ended up writing one more and she's like, will you review them? Let me know what you think. If you want more questions to choose from, I will write more. But they were fine. Honestly, I could have written 4 of the original 6, but I had 7, which was fine. I did end up picking the new one. But that start frenetic energy, talk about that. And then the questions in and of themselves, right? Like I am rolling through the catalogs in my head of knowledge to figure out which ones are going to be the best ones to respond to, right? And so my plan was like basically 4.5 days was to write a question a day and then edit the last day, right? I spent the first day deciding which 4 questions to answer. I didn't do any writing. I charted out very brief outlines for all 7 of the questions in order to decide which ones to do. One question I spent an hour just thinking about because I really wanted to respond to it, but did not feel like I could to the extent that I wanted to. Like, I feel like it was kind of an unsolvable social problem, and I didn't. I was like, I actually can't do what they're asking me to do. You're posing a hypothetical question for me to create something that I don't actually believe we can create, nor do I agree should be created. And so I was like, I want to respond to this because I feel like it would be the easiest one to respond to, but I can't. So it was just like, so this is like my process the first day. And then at the night, because I feel like I'm behind, right? At night, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start writing this first one. And I sit down and I develop a good outline. I like start looking up resources, all this kind of stuff. And I do not write one word. I don't write one word the whole first day. And so I get up the second day and I'm not a morning person and I start to drink coffee and I'm just like, okay, new day, we're all right, right? New day, we can make it happen. And then I'm like, oh, I should eat something good. And then I was like, okay, well, I pawned off George for the weekend so I could really concentrate on this. So then I was like, okay, with him not here, it'd be kind of nice. Actually, I should probably like put in a load of laundry. And then you just don't have to worry about that the rest of the exam period because I have clean sheets. Like, just like this is like the chaos within my mind, right? And like this whole time, I'm like, each of these exam questions are sitting on the four burners of the stovetop of my mind, right? And I am like taking them off of the burners and putting them on the stove to scald my stovetop. Because I'm just like, I can't let them continue to simmer here. I've got to do something with them. But then I keep like getting myself so worked up, not writing. And I'm like, all of these things are things that I know about. And it was just like the, it's how like when I was, you know, I want to get back into running, right? But it's like that mental blockade, right? Of like, I can't do this. This is too hard. But actually what's preventing it, preventing you from doing it is yourself, right? It is all your own limitations, right? Your own mental blockades. And my gosh, did I feel that with this. This was the hardest writing I have ever done in my life. And I've like not, I like to journal. I enjoy the writing process after a certain point, but it's like that thing when you're running, the first mile sucks. But once you get past it, it's kind of a really nice rhythm. And I just could not get myself to even run a quarter of a mile. Like I really struggled. So I didn't start writing until Friday night, almost 2 days into this exam period. And I only wrote half of a question on Friday. So Saturday morning rolls around. I now have 2.5 days left of this exam and I haven't even finished one full question. And it was just like, it ended up being, all right, we're fine. We submitted it. Friday night was rough. Saturday was still really rough. But then Saturday night into Sunday, and then all of Sunday was really strong. And I came out actually Monday morning, yesterday morning, last day of the exam, with one section left to write of a paper, which took me 2 hours, and then I still had the rest of the day to edit, and I ended up turning the exam in about 3 hours early. So it was fine. And then I, 84 pages in total, about 60 pages of content when you take out like citations and formatting stuff and images that I put in there, like wrote a ton, feel like I answered things in a really comprehensive way, but the imposter syndrome, the names that I caught myself saying in my head about myself, like it was like that first day was one of the worst days of my life. And I love what I get to do. I feel so blessed every day to be in this program, to get to do this kind of work. I'm reminded all the time why I do this, right? Like I am in my ikigai, right? Like totally passion, purpose, calling, loving what I do, being called to what I do, having the skills to do what I do. But that day sucked, right? Yeah. And we can dissect it like we dissected your bad day. I can tell you all the things I learned from that and all the things that led to that, right? But I also am at the point of like, it was a rough day, right? And right. I'm going to leave it at that. And I came out and I did the thing and it's turned in. Right. And I think it's probably good enough to get a pass and to move on in the program, right? Like to claim this expertise, but it also was really rough. And I feel like I pulled on a lot of what I needed. I pulled on a lot of the tools in the toolkit, right? But it dragged me to a place I haven't been dragged to in a while.
And I think, so two big questions as I was hearing you. One, what the hell with the person who doesn't show up with the...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't understand humans. I don't. So that's a big question. The other, I was thinking this whole time, you probably have to be in existential crisis. Like, have I made the right choice in what I'm doing?
Oh, I'm sure at some point that crossed my mind multiple times.
But then when we start to get into that space of who am I?
Yeah.
And I had a lovely conversation this past week where I share that I often hear, I have my mom's voice in my head often, and there are two things that come up. One is, you're a little too big for your britches, and the other is, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And let me tell you, the writing prompt of who do you think you are is probably one of the best writing prompts, especially when I'm in not the best of spaces.
Yeah.
Because if I can turn it to the pen or the pencil, I get out of imposter syndrome. I get out of my own way.
Yeah.
The channeling of the writing puts it on the paper to say, is this actually true?
Yeah.
And no, you know, I'm the narrative that we can go down in the lack of belief in self. It's a slippery slide.
Yep.
And I think the tool for me of writing is always going to help me get to the outskirts of the narrative. Sometimes I do that through the naming of the archetypal parts, but I think even you dividing up instead of absolutely taking on full force gave you an opportunity to do the tools of a little bit of self-healing.
Yeah.
That picture that you just showed me, which has to go on the Insta post, adaptability loves aesthetics. It is aesthetically pleasing and calming. You create for you what you need to temper the freneticism.
And I think, I think
you know what you need.
Yes, but knowing what you need and giving yourself what you need are two different things, right?
Very much.
I knew that I needed to shift how I was thinking about myself, what I can contribute, right? And so I feel like while we have both had these awful days this past week, I feel like you responded in a way of self-growth, and I need to do a little bit more work. Right?
Oh, no. Like, see, I see that you totally responded in self-growth because you didn't stay up all night long. You woke up and said, okay, new day.
Yeah.
You were doing all of these resets within.
Really trying. Like, had to, or else it would have been a death spiral. Like,
all I could think of as you're explaining this is thinking about when dashboards were due.
Oh my God.
And you'd break yourself.
Yeah.
You would break yourself.
They had to get the data. They had to get the data.
To get it done. And now you're like, okay, pause. Recenter. Pause. Recenter.
Yeah, gosh, that's good. I need to see. I'm like still running on the very minimal sleep, major sleep deficit from this. So I haven't quite thought through that. But I think you're right, right? And how I've responded in high stress situations in the past, which, full transparency, it was not all healthy. There were a lot of mental spirals, but also like still didn't eat well, like still forgot to eat, still forgot to like do things I needed to do to care for myself in a lot of ways, which is how I get when I'm really stressed. But it was the default of like, I have to shift. It was not always successful and I needed to a lot. But I did default much more quickly to, I have to shift how I'm thinking about this, or it's not going to, like, I'm not going to come out the other side of this.
Well, it was power and a pivot that demonstrated your capacity of choosing differently.
Yeah. There you go. That's good.
I mean, we have to be in the practice of our preach or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So I would love if you and I just joined and said, hey, you know, our lives are really, really good. And all the decisions we've made up to this point, future self is like, good job. That is not the everyday. But I do think when you look at growth, and I say this often lately, I want to reparent my children so badly because I was such a grip. I would love this version of me to be momming them in a way that was more like open and willing and expansive and flow and just asking questions because I wanted to expand their knowledge and expand their capacity.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, I just wish I wasn't so grippy. I love the therapist I work with. She will call me out when I say I should, or I wish I could have, mm-hmm. or if I could go back, she's like, yeah, we don't exist in that shame space here. Nope, no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I would love to go back in time and reparent my children because I would be so much more effective and so much more loving.
Mm-hmm.
I would release the grip. The world, the universe, everything is teaching me. Partners who are showing up in my life, humans who are in my circle, humans who have just recently been part of my circle and who've been always part of my circle are mm-hmm. teaching me mm-hmm. how to let go of the grippiness.
Love it.
And future me is like, yep, we got there. We're okay. still going to have to practice.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. I mean, that's totally part of it is we learn. Right? Every situation is an opportunity to learn and to grow and to shift, to practice what we preach, right? And then also with the other side of that coin, the ways in which we don't practice it to the fullest extent, or we can shift how we practice it, right?
Right.
To live it and to embody it in an even fuller way. Yeah.
And if we're lucky, we have people in our life who gently call that out.
Mm. Yeah. It's good. It's good. What do we want to leave people with?
I hope they're excited about our next episode because I am. I think we're going to do like some live sort of personality fun awareness that the TikTokery has brought to my life anyway. You know, I like to joke when I talk to people about strengths when I'm facilitating or as a coach. You know, I've taken all the super fun surveys, including like the really scientific, what Disney character are you?
Yeah, of
it's
course.
To me, some of these are really, really fun because they also tell my strength story, which is science proven.
Yep.
You know, so I think this will be kind of a fun sort of, I mean, we're smart people here, right? We talk about best practices and we talk about tools that are proven, but mm-hmm. we also have fun. And so I think...
in our sophisticated fun. We have sophisticated fun.
When that word was used, I said, like, what'd you say?
I know. I was just like, wait, I'm sorry. In response to what? In response to you... being you? Like, no,
right.
That's
I said, wait a second.
I mean, not that it's like you're the opposite of sophisticated. It's just not,
no,
it's
I
not
own
probably,
clumsy.
It's not probably one of the top 40 adjectives I would use for you. Like, it's in there, but it's definitely not.
Wow.
I that's mean, pretty... graceful, not in terms of graceful
still
in terms
not,
of your language
still not
and
in the top 40.
No, very much so up there. So synonyms of sophistication, but not sophisticated.
Right. So, I mean, you should have seen my shock. So I was
which you
like,
could not mask,
what?
Of course.
And I said, I spend a lot of time stumbling. And then later, when I was kind of debriefing with my colleague, I got to more of the root of that.
Mm.
And that is, that's self-protection.
Oh, 100%.
So if I tell you before you even get the chance to witness me fall down your steps that I am a messy wreck,
you then know
that I'm a messy wreck. And then you don't call it out in me. I call it out before we get there. That stumble down the stairs, by the way, literally and figuratively, like it was because I was in a hurry.
Yeah.
And because I was rushing and because I thought I needed to, I have like a very quick speed. Once I make a decision to do something, it's like we get off the plane, I'm gone. I'm practically at a baggage claim. And I turn around, I'm like, hey, But, like, that's a watch out, because that speed will cause a stumble.
Yeah. It is. And it's totally... Like, identifying yourself as a clumsy person or as a awkward person, like, is very much a leaning into your own insecurities, right?
So that self-deprecation.
Other people won't call it out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. So, to hear sophisticated and then to see that word again later in feedback, I was like, or survey, I was like, goodness, I don't know what I am pulling off here, but I will be grateful for it. And I will lean into it.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting, since someone named me in that light, already some things that I've decided about doing.
Love that. Mm-hmm. We love that. Okay. So not only look forward to next episodes, but I think in terms of, like, reflecting on this one, like, when was your last bad day, right? What did it reveal?
What tools did you use?
What tools did you use? How did you respond to it, right? And sometimes we don't always respond in the totally healthiest way with all the tools in our toolkit. And sometimes we do. And we get to learn from both of those experiences. And sometimes it's okay. If you don't want to engage with this follow-up, don't engage with this follow-up. Leave the bad day as a bad day in the course of your life story and your life's history, because it brought you to today. Right? So, okay. So without further ado then, thank you for tuning in to episode 117 of Jen and Millie. If you enjoyed today's conversation, consider sharing this episode with a friend. To share your responses to the questions that we pose, the best way to do so is by giving us a follow on Instagram. That's at Jen and Millie, at GENNANDMILLIE. And I just want to note that I did all of that from memory, because I exited out of the intro and conclusion script. What a great bookend to this conversation.
Because you're sophisticated.
Oh, again, not a term I would use to describe myself either. Definitely not in top 40 either for me. So, and with that, thanks for joining us. Until next time.